97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Welcome back to the Mark Cox Morning Show. We are here with you on this Thursday morning, the last day of July, and the weather is going to be great today. So just enjoy that while it lasts. There may be another rain shower or two here, but my highs are below 80. We needed that on Monday. Where was that on Monday when I was golfing? That was awful. So here we are. Anyway, it's a gorgeous day. We got a full show for you here this hour, so stay tuned for that. Coming up here in a minute, we're going to talk to David Stokes. He's the director of municipal policy over at Show Me. And lo and behold, it's deja vu all over again. Here we are, St. Louis County, and we've got a county executive under indictment. How about that? Coming up, we're going to talk to Jim Talent, a former U.S. senator, anxious to hear his thoughts on this insider trading bill that the president and Josh Hawley are at odds over. And at the bottom of the hour, we've got the former Ferguson chief, Tom Jackson, is going to join us. We've been kicking around what happened in Cincinnati. Excuse me for using the word kicking, because the guy in Cincinnati got kicked during a violent attack in downtown Cincinnati. We're going to talk to Tom about that situation and how it's been handled at about 7:35. Right now, let me get to my friend David Stokes from the Show Me Institute. And David, great to have you back on again, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. Great to be on the air with you, Mark and Kim. Always enjoy talking with you.
Yeah, it's great. Great having you. You know, I was joking with Kim earlier. I'm like, so the last two county executives in St. Louis County have both found themselves under indictment. Now, obviously, the charges, I think, in the case against Steve Stinger were a lot more serious, but still, these are felony charges now that Sam Page is facing over this mailer.
And I think that's a fair point you made about the difference here between Stinger and what we're seeing now. So I think you're right to make that sort of distinction, but it doesn't mean it's not incredibly serious what's happening here. Both the misdemeanor election charges and then the more serious felony charges related to the same thing, of course. And it will certainly be interesting to see if perhaps, and I'm just sort of guessing here, in the end, I'm not an attorney, but what if he were to be convicted of the misdemeanor election charges and acquitted of the felony charges? Then would he be expected to resign from office? That would be a very interesting case, because the charter doesn't seem to require that in that instance, but it certainly would be a black mark on it. So that's just one certain possibility that it's going to be interesting to follow over these coming months here in Clayton.
So Steve Stinger did go to prison because of his charges. Now, obviously, we don't know how this whole thing will play out. I know he has a court hearing. Sam Page does on, it's August 29th, I believe. What do you envision coming out of this, if you were a betting man?
I'm not very much of a betting man, Kim. Very, very low-stakes golf wagers occasionally. but what I hope comes out of this in the big picture, let's take it away from County Executive Page for a second, if we can. In the big picture, I would very much hope, and I expect this is good that can come from this, all the cities and counties and school boards and fire districts to step back, how they've all been abusing this process for decades. And they've all been, every time something's on the ballot, you get taxpayer-funded mailings that are, you know, air quote, I'm doing air quotes here, for information purposes only and neutral, again, in air quotes, but they're not really. They're always completely biased to anybody who reads it. And they use tax dollars to advocate for a position, usually passage of a tax increase or a bond issue, or in this case and others, the defeat of a certain ballot proposition. So hopefully what comes out of this in the long run is that local government stops that practice or severely curtails it, and that would be a win for taxpayers and for good government.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. David Stokes with us, Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. let's talk about what happened here. I mean, Kim talked about it earlier in the news, but there was clear intent to make sure that this didn't go through a bidding process, right? That they kept the postage below a certain amount, that several people warned him against doing this when they were doing it. And then the attorney for the county told him to remove certain language from it, which they didn't do. It was the very clear to me, just looking at it from the outside, that the intent was to dissuade people from voting in favor of Prop B.
Right. And I recall getting that mailing and seeing it at the time, and it was probably more egregious than most.
Yes.
For so clearly advocating for a position. And so, look, there's a price to be paid for that, and that is being done. That's happening with this indictment here. But as you just lay out those facts, I mean, obviously that's for a jury and judges to decide, and it's going to be interesting to see if the people who make these decisions, the jury and the judges, if they view this as just sort of unfortunate politics as usual, or if they think that it went to the level of a crime. And if they think it went to the level of a crime, whether it's the misdemeanor or whether they obviously much more serious felonies. But I would hope, whatever the result, and not that campaign should be, you know, sacrificed here for it, but whatever the result, if he deserves to be acquitted, he should be acquitted. But, you know, the good result that can come from just the indictment is that it will scare local officials around the state and throughout the St. Louis area to stop doing this. Perhaps not quite as egregiously as this appears to be, but to just stop sending out these taxpayer-funded advocacy efforts that are so clearly one-sided. And that's hopefully the good that can come out of this for everybody, whatever the individual result of County Executive Page's case.
Well, you're a glass half full kind of guy, Dave Stokes, I have to say, because, you know, I looked at this and I've already seen his supporters coming forward and claiming that it was, a politically motivated charge. The fact that we've had two consecutive county executives charged with facing criminal charges just continually erodes people's confidence in their elected officials. And this one,
right, and you know,
yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely. And so, you know, and people, the last executive of Jackson County, which is the main county of Kansas City, Mike Sanders, he was indicted and sent to prison. So not the current one, but the one prior to the current one. So it's a trend that I hate seeing. And when I worked for the county council in 2001, you know, I was open to bribe for a council member who then took it to the police. But another council member went to jail for taking bribes at that time. That related to taxicab licensing.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have this idea that city government is corrupt and county government is clean, or at least pre-Stenger, we had this idea that county government was clean. But it's not. I mean, you have these problems at local government at every level, and that's why you need watchdogs, if I could take it in a little different direction, to not have a county auditor doing their job over the past decade is terrible, because this is the type of stuff that a county auditor should be able to flag and document and make recommendations and improvements to. And St. Louis County not having an auditor is such a problem, and this is an example of why.
Well, I mean, there was a mass exodus after Stenger left, right? A lot of the staff members just quit. So, you know, what will happen here? And maybe that's not a bad thing if Page brought some of these people in. Maybe it's time for them to go anyway. And, but that could leave a lot of these big positions in county government open.
And Stenger's lasting legacy is that everybody in that building knows that anybody else could be wired at any time, because that was the lesson we learned, is that everybody was wearing a wire when they were investigating Stenger. So you would have thought that Page would have learned from that, but apparently not. So I don't know.
Right. Nobody in that building talks about anything except the weather now.
just like Joe Biden, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. David Stokes, thanks for your time. Great having you on again.
hey, you got a lot of information about good government and Freedom of Information Act requests and the like at showmeinstitute.org. Always great talking to y'all.
Yep, great resource, David. We appreciate that. Thank you for giving us some time today. Wow. Yeah, it's just when you think of it, you know, Lisa Clancy, not surprisingly, Paige's lone ally on the council, Democrat from Maplewood there, came out and blamed it on Attorney General Andrew Bailey. That you know, we have an attorney general who's shown on many occasions he'll jump at any opportunity to grab a headline. Well, the headline here is you're accused of improperly using taxpayer money to dissuade voters from stripping you of some of your authority. That's exactly what it appears happened here, Lisa. Sorry about that. Coming up, we got former Senator Jim Talent. We'll get his take on this current dispute between the president and Senator Josh Hawley. Stay tuned.
So when you spoke to the president, did he explain why he called you second tier?
Well, I think that the president, a number of people who are opposed to banning stock trading had said to the president that he would be covered by the bill. He'd have to sell Mar-a-Lago and sell assets. Not the case at all. The president and the vice president, all their assets are totally exempted. And here's the point. This is what we talked about. The point of this bill is to ban members of Congress from trading on the information that only they have. I've supported this bill for years, Jesse. I think we call it the Pelosi Act. It is named for her because she is the poster child of this kind of behavior. It ought to be illegal and it ought to be prosecutable.
So what Pelosi will say is that she doesn't manage it.
Well, that was obviously current Senator Josh Hawley there on with Jesse Waters last night. Right now we have former Senator Jim Talent on the phone. Jim, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mark.
Have you seen this dust up between President Trump and Josh Hawley over banning legislators from insider trading?
I actually have not. This is the first I've heard about it. I thought Senator Hawley gave a good response.
Yeah.
I mean, I've read the same stories and seen the same stories that your listeners have seen about some members of Congress who seem to be making pretty unusual profits on the stock market. So I think it's a good idea to investigate it. I haven't read Josh's bill, but it's the kind of thing where you hope the legislative process works. In other words, you hope you get a real investigation, you really learn what's happening, and if necessary, you come up with changes to control abuses without, you know, making people sell everything they've got if they get elected. I mean, you are supposed to put it in, but you don't actually have to put it in, but what you have to do is you're supposed to file very extensive disclosure reports on a regular basis to create transparency. I remember Brenda, who did it for me, my wife, sweating over those reports, and the ethics people said, used to tell her, says, you know, you had the absolutely the best reports we've ever seen.
Well, of course, because Brenda was doing it.
Yeah.
Well, people, the argument has been that it would de-incentivize business owners from running for, you know, some of these elected positions, you know, for Congress, right? If they're told that they can't trade stocks. Do you think that there's legitimacy to that, or do you think that's really a moot point?
Yeah, I think you always want to be a little bit careful imposing requirements just for the sake of requirements, because it can have that impact of people saying, look, I don't want to go through that. I mean, honest people who want to serve and ought to have the opportunity to see if the voters want to elect them. So, yeah, you do have that danger. But I will say, I've read these stories and some of these profits that people have been making. You know, I have asked, wait a minute, they sure seem to pick very well.
Yes.
Now, there are ethics committees in both bodies, and if there's a suspicion of an individual doing this, you know, a complaint can be filed, and then you investigate that individual and you find out. Maybe that's the better way of doing it, is to sort of beef up ethics committee enforcement, because what it tends to be is, you know, the vast majority of people aren't doing this sweat bullets to try and I mean to tell you, it's extremely detailed, and to try and keep up with these disclosure requirements. And then the people who do abuse it, they just cut the corners and they get away with it because, you know, nobody ever catches them. So I'm glad Senator Hawley's going into this area. I guess the president thought
you know, I'm entitled to continue, you know, having investments even though I'm president. But I think the senator cleared that up.
Yeah. I think you're right about that. I mean, it wouldn't affect the president. Now, as I understand it, and obviously you served in the House and then the Senate, when a president gets elected, whatever they've got kind of goes into a blind trust and somebody else is handling all that. Why wouldn't they just require the same thing for members of the House and the Senate? Wouldn't that be the easiest way to clear this up?
And this is it. You could do it that way. Now, I suppose if you have, I'm sitting here, and this is not a subject I'm expert in, because all of our, or virtually all of our money was in these index funds that we really did not control. In other words, we were just a passive investor. We didn't make, and that's not just because of Congress. It's because that's how we choose to invest money. In other words, the few occasions where I've attempted to pick stocks have not been such that I want to repeat it. You know what I mean? It's not an area where I have the Midas touch. So there are ways of doing it, and I think either saying you have to, or you have a system where, look, these are the safe harbors. If you do it then this way, then everybody understands you're upfront, you know, you're ethical. If you want to do it the other way, you can do it, but you have all these disclosure requirements and transparency, and then people can go after you if something looks suspicious.
Yeah, the you have to call that the Pelosi touch from now on.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't like to name names, but that's the first name I was thinking of. Yeah, I mean, she seems to have done very well in the market over the years, and being the speaker especially, she has, because she knows what bills are going to be. I shouldn't just say Nancy, okay, but the speaker knows what bills are going to be coming up. In other words, if you control the leadership, particularly in the House, you control the agenda, which means you know a bill is coming up and you know the market's going to react just to the fact the bill's being debated.
Sure.
And that does give you some leverage if you choose to use it.
Yep, very true. In the minute and a half we have left, I'll ask you a simple question. Do you think we're facing a government shutdown in September?
No, I think they'll get something done. I hope it's not one of these last minute things with the big bill and all that, because these things have gotten to be very difficult. And what it does point out, Mark, is we simply have to get back to the process of passing appropriations bills.
Yes.
And it's not a good process, but it's obviously better than the alternative for all kinds of reasons. This uncertainty, the fact that huge bills pass that people haven't looked at, and also it's very negative, these continuing resolutions, for the agencies that do need to work, like the Department of Defense. It constrains their ability to start new programs. There's all kinds of issues with it. So until we do, we're going to have this spectacle periodically, and it's going to be ugly. And the answer to it is to start passing appropriations bills again. The Senate's the problem.
Senator Talent, we appreciate your time, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Jim Talent there. Coming up, we'll get to Tom Jackson, former chief in Ferguson.
So I think by the irresponsibility with social media is it just shows one side of the equation. Quite frequently, without context, without factual context. And then people run with that. And then it grows legs and it becomes something bigger that we then have to try to manage as part of the investigation.
That is the police chief, Terry Thietge, I think I'm pronouncing her name correctly there in Cincinnati, referring to the fact that I think they've arrested another person now in connection with that beatdown this weekend. I mean, it's true that a social media post doesn't show everything, but I listened to some of the court testimony yesterday by the prosecutor and the defense, and what's pretty obvious here is that they're now trying to basically blame the victims, it strikes me. I could be wrong about that, but that's kind of the impression I get. This chief is mad because she sort of lost control over this situation because it got blown out of proportion, she says, by the social media post. I asked my friend Tom Jackson, the former police chief up in Ferguson, to join us to talk about this morning. And Tom, good morning to you.
Good morning, my friend.
Great to have you back on. How you been?
Been pretty well. How about you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you. You know, I asked you to come on just to get your thoughts on this. I remember talking to you about what happened in Ferguson that day at the Mike Brown scene up there. And you told me one time that whole thing kind of spiraled out of control in the first few hours.
Yeah, it absolutely did. But back then, that was 11 years ago now. Hard to believe.
Wow.
But we considered social media as the way we told our citizens where the parade was going to be or when the, you know, town hall meetings were going to be. We had no idea the power that social media had to bring a story worldwide, literally in minutes. And but you were a newsman for a long, long time. And you knew that you had to source everything, get approval from your editors and your bosses before you put it out. And what you end up with is the regular media trying to keep up with social media, and they just can't. There's no way.
They can't. And half-truths and lies spread like wildfire, right? It was just the whole hands-up, don't-shoot thing had kind of gone viral within 24 hours of that.
Oh, it went viral within minutes.
Wow.
I was just got on the scene, and my boss called me, and he was telling me about that. The guy was on the news telling that story. It was insane.
I mean, how do you go against that, or how do you move forward knowing that this is the reality that these departments are going to be facing? It's not like social media is going to be going away. In fact, if anything, now you have AI and how many people are able to alter these videos and images, and those will spread like wildfire. And I think that's what's weird about this comment from the Cincinnati police chief, where I understand the frustration, but I mean, this is 2025. This is where it's going.
Yeah, absolutely. And this reality has been around for, you know, well, since 2014 at least. And she's in charge of a big enough police department that they should have their own social media platform and their own way of getting messages out as fast as the other social medias, and they, you know, she's big enough to have somebody on duty at all times to counter what's going out over social media, or to put forth what they're doing, what steps they're taking, you know, put their side forth. So there's at least some way to counter what's going out over, you know, the social media platforms.
Well, I don't want to put words in your mouth. My guess is you're pretty happily retired at this point, because I look at this situation, Tom, and I think to myself, I don't know anything about Terry Thietke. I don't know what kind of cop she is. I don't want to speculate, but I know that the city of St. Louis and the city of Cincinnati are not that different in terms of the politics that control what goes on there. They've got a city councilwoman who's already come out and basically said that these white people got what they deserved. You've got a city council that had, if not defunded the police, certainly they have faced some of the same pressures of not having enough officers in certain areas, and they're understaffed. The challenges are tremendous in addition to all of the social media pressure.
Well, yeah, and those, you know, those blame the victim messages and defund the police are not the message you want to put out to your citizens, because that's a small number really of people that feel that way, and the rest of this industry wants to know what you're doing about it. The chief, you know, not to pile onto one of my peers, but she's out there blaming social media and chastising the press. She should be saying what they're going to do about it and what steps they're taking. I mean, her officers did a great job finding these people and arresting them, but her focus really needs to be on, you know, making sure that the public feels that they're safe and that the police are out there doing their jobs. And she didn't put that message forward really at all. She acted like, well, this is just one thing. You should be really, really paying attention to the jazz festival that was going on.
Yeah.
And no, this is not an isolated incident. It's a horrible incident. It's a terrible thing. And the whole world saw it. And, you know, you can't really minimize it. It was just disgusting to watch.
I don't know if it was the guy who was just arrested, maybe the third person, but one of the people involved in this beatdown, I think either was out on out on bond? There was something where he had just been recently released. Am I getting that story right, Mark?
You are correct. He had been arraigned and given like a 10% bond and was let out. And he was, of course, charged with facing assault charges and had already been let out of jail.
Wow.
And had he just been left locked up, because they said they gave him like a $400 bond. So, of course, he was out. He should have been locked up when this whole thing happened.
And we see that play out here in St. Louis all the time.
Correct. And I don't know how, I mean, other than reforming the justice system, that's a long time frustration for police officers, right, Tom?
Oh, it absolutely is. You put these violent criminals away, you arrest them and bring them, you know, to the justice system, and then these liberal judges just set them free. And that's not what the majority of the people want. They want bad guys put away. That's what all of us want. Well, and they're basically pandering to the woke.
I expect this thing is going to blow up a little more. This is going to be there'll be protests in Cincinnati. I listened to some of the coverage on one of the affiliates here, WXIX, this morning. So we will we'll see what happens with it. And I don't know, for people who maybe don't remember, Tom, tell them about the book you wrote about your experiences up in Ferguson.
Oh, thanks for that. Yeah, because of social media and the, you know, the Justice Department at the time, Obama's Justice Department, the stories that were going out over the media on a daily basis were just completely false about what was really happening. They were talking about peaceful protests and that when it was violence every single night. So I wrote a book about it because I figured at some point my grandkids are going to be learning about this in school, and I want my story to be out there. And the book is about what really happened in Ferguson and what the country can learn from it, which they haven't.
But at least you've got the book out there, so the truth is out there if people want to find it, for sure. Tom, thank you so much, and hope to talk to you again soon.
Okay, great.
You bet.
Thanks a lot, Mark.
You bet. Yep. Tom Jackson there, a former chief up in Ferguson, and great to get him on here this morning. Tough job. You got some of the good guys, and Tom was one of them. But so many of these folks these days are political appointees, and they are there because they're going to basically do the bidding of their progressive mayor. Right. And when it's been DEI controlled and politically correct, you're not going to get the level of security you need and policing.
Exactly. It's a big problem. It really is.
What are we talking about in Kim on a Whim?
We've all gone to the doctor's office and they have you fill out the same forms you just filled out at the other doctor's office a month ago. And it takes 15 minutes, your medical history. It's annoying and it's time consuming and a lot of us can't stand doing it. Well, Trump has a way to fix that. He thinks that he has the solution to make things a lot easier. But understandably, there are some concerns about privacy.
Yep, this is going to be huge.
Kim on a Whim.
Instead of filling out the same tedious paperwork at every medical appointment, patients will simply be able to grant their doctors access to their records at the push of a button. Just a button and you're all set, and all the information the doctor needs will be immediately transmitted. The system will be entirely opt-in, and there will be no centralized government-run database, which everyone is always concerned about. I'm less concerned than anybody. I say whatever it is, it is. But people are very, very concerned about the personal records. They want to keep them very quiet, and that's their choice. I think it's a great thing because it will be. It'll be absolutely quiet. Instead, doctors and patients will always remain in control. The benefits to millions of Americans will be enormous. We will save time, we will save money, and most importantly, we'll save lives. It's just going to make people live longer and be a lot healthier. I think that's really what you're looking to do.
Here's what's happening. So the Trump administration comes out yesterday working with HHS, so, you know, RFK Jr.
Right.
And they're talking about how Americans will be able to decide next year to opt in. This is not an opt out. It's an opt in situation where you would be able to upload your personal health data, medical records on these new apps that will be run by these private tech companies. And it's supposed to make it easier. So when you go to the doctor, like Trump said, you're not wasting, you know, 15 minutes or however long it takes you, a half hour in some cases, to list all the medications and the surgeries you've had and your mom's medical history and your dad's medical history and the things that we don't really like to have to do and we're wondering, why don't you already have this information? It's supposed to kind of streamline that whole process. The question, of course, and you heard Trump address this, was, okay, well, who will have access to that information? What are they doing with it? Because like Google, Amazon, CVS, a lot of these big companies have already said, we're in. Let's do this.
Yeah, but you would, did you say there's an opt-in for this?
It's opt-in. Is what he had said.
You would have to say, I want my medical records to be part of this, as opposed to it's going to happen and you have to opt out by saying, I don't want my medical records as part of this. That's a win because there will, I know people, and some of them have probably reached out to me already this morning and I missed on social media or DM, who will be dead set against all of their stuff being available for people in other systems to see. Now, obviously, HIPAA sort of sets the guardrails for all of this. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that you should be overly concerned about that. There's a good chance that, like, for example, when I go from one doctor to another within BJC, they have all of my records there, right, already.
They should.
And for some things, they can even look at other medical tests, like MRIs and things like that have been done that are in the system. So I just don't think this is a huge leap. I'm glad they're doing it, quite frankly, because I don't have some of the same safety concerns that I know some of my friends have. That's where the opt-in thing is mm-hmm. important.
Someone brought up on Facebook, if, say, there were a leak, because, you know, if Apple, Google, Samsung, Amazon, all these different companies are saying we'll be part of this and that information would be shared amongst those different platforms, there could be hackers who get access to this information. So someone brought up on Facebook, one of our listeners, hey, let's just say you're going to try to find buy a gun and it comes out that you were prescribed anxiety medication or something like that. And for whatever reason, you were denied something because of your history, your medical history. Now, I don't know how you would have access to that information.
Well, that would be the FBI getting...
Unless it were hacked or the... Yeah.
That'd be the FBI getting a hold of it, but I don't think there's nothing in here that's going
to
allow that.
Well, and Trump's trying to make it clear that that's not what this is about. This isn't about the federal government trying to spy on your information.
Alec on Facebook here is saying we already have that. It's called MyChart. Well, within the BJC system, there is something called MyChart where you can sign in and you can see your appointments and the medication you're on and all that stuff. And anybody within BJC can see that if they look at your chart, your medical doctor, your heart doctor, whoever it is. What I think this would do, Alec, and I could be wrong, is let's say you're on vacation in Florida and you have a health emergency mm-hmm. and you have to go to some health system down there that's not part of BJC. If you've opted into this, the people in Florida would
they
be able
it.
To sign in mm-hmm. and see your health history without having to wait on that for either you to tell them or them to have to reach out to VJC up here in St. Louis and try to get those records.
Mm-hmm. Which can take a while and it's frustrating. Dash does, he asks a question about, so is the information shared between insurance companies, they would just know who to cancel. I'm not under the understanding that it would just be shared with insurance companies because I would not like that either because we've seen what they did with people who didn't get the COVID shot and that would be the other thing would be that remember people if you didn't get vaccinated with the COVID shot, a lot of some of these hospitals I think were denying you care across the country. So, I mean, there are questions to be asked about this. I don't think I'm just let's go, but I don't have as big of a concern as maybe some people, but I think I'm skeptical. I would like to ease into it.
I get that. I get it. All right. Coming up next hour, we will maybe talk to Shannon Bream about that. She's, I'm sure, covered that story probably yesterday when the president signed that. Some of the legal concerns over it. I've also got St. Louis County Councilman Dennis Hancock on the Sam Page indictment yesterday. It's a big deal. And some of the county council members have been speaking out on this. Some are calling for him to resign. We're going to see what Dennis Hancock thinks about that at the top of the hour. Stay tuned.
Get more at 971talk.com.